Balbriggan has been Ireland's fastest growing town for several years now. It's changed completely in the last decade, but the seaside of Balbriggan is caught in something of a time warp. I was there on a beautiful morning this week. The sun was shining, the beach was pristine, but sadly, the small harbour there was looking really neglected. But a rejuvenation project to transform this whole area is about to get underway. I met some of those involved with the plans and with the fishermen in Balbriggan. First, I spoke to Aoife Sheridan of the Economic and Tourism Development Department in Fingal County Council. She told me about their plans.
Well, it's a very wide-ranging project. It's a five-year plan, and the difference about this plan is very much that it came from the people. There was a massive consultation with the people of Balbriggan to find out what their priorities were and what they wanted to see done. The things that they identified to us, obviously Main Street is a very big thing for them, that they want to see the Main Street, which has suffered a decline in recent years, they want that rejuvenated. But a very close second was the harbour here, which is very close to people's hearts in Balbriggan, and it means an awful lot to them. And, you know, that was second just by a hair's breadth in terms of things that they wanted to see improved. So, you know, they want to see the harbour brought to life again, and we very much want to see that, you know, people discover Balbriggan again, because people tend to miss out Balbriggan. You know, it's hidden behind the arches. An awful lot of people wouldn't know that it was here. You've got a fantastic beach here, a lovely prospect out to the lighthouse, which, you know, was the dome for a long time was missing and caused a lot of consternation here locally. But that was fixed in about 2017. Fingal County Council put the dome back on, and it suffered some corrosion, and it was. We got the dome fixed and the light put back in there in 2017. So, you know, that's kind of signalling that our commitment is to rejuvenating the town, and the harbour is very much a part of that. You can see it's a working fishing port. There's a lot of boats around today.
It's very busy.
There's a lot of fishermen still working today on it as a working port. But, you know, it needs some tender love and care, which I think it's missed for the last couple of years. So what we want to do is, you know, listen to what the fishermen need who are working the port. So we're looking at upgrading the utilities and the storage and the things that they need to make sure that they can keep operating. But at the same time, we really want to give the public round back to the public. People don't really walk down the piers too much and go out and appreciate the lighthouse and the vista that you can get from out there. So we very much want to promote that and draw people back down here. And we think we can do that by redeveloping this area here. So we're talking about widening the footpaths, making sure that we redevelop this area here and put in some new propositions here in terms of the public realm, so that people can actually come down and enjoy the space, and that it draws people down the pier to walk down there. And what we hope to do is kind of put in things like kiosks that will promote commercial development. Okay. And, you know, you can buy an ice cream down here and fish and chips, and, you know, there'll be leisure places as well. We're going to examine the tidal conditions here in the harbour.
We're here in the morning time. It's partially dried out, but it does almost completely dry out at low water. So it means then for fishermen, they really have to plan their day, their working time around that.
They do. So and we need to get a deeper understanding of those tidal conditions before we do anything that will upset the balance that they have here. We do want to develop that tourism and leisure proposition, because there's kind of fortuitous convergence of a number of projects here. We have the coastal greenway, which is coming through Balbriggan. So once that greenway comes through here, you're going to have an awful lot more footfall down through this harbour area. And we want to make sure we make the most of that by making sure that there's leisure propositions here for them to do. So we'll be examining the conditions here in the harbour and around the beach in terms of what the water conditions can support.
It looks quite difficult to come into, because it's so busy with trawlers.
Yeah.
And there's no real pontoon for you to tie up to.
Exactly. So that's the kind of things that we're going to start looking at in terms of what can we provide, what do people want to see here. We're going to need an awful lot of input from the local fishermen here who are already working to see what they need in terms of amenities, electrics, utilities, storage, that kind of thing. So we're going to make sure we take care of them. But we also want to develop this new proposition so that it helps the local economy in the town to redevelop. It's suffered quite badly in recent years, and particularly now post-COVID, it's taken another hit. So we want to make sure that we develop that carefully in consultation with the people, so that, you know, we develop a really strong proposition around the waterfront, because it is really close to the hearts of people in Balbriggan, and it has a huge amount to offer. It's a beautiful vista here this morning with blue sky and blue waters. You feel like you could be in Spain.
It's gorgeous day.
People don't realise it's here, so we really want to make the most of it and make sure that we have something to offer them.
Are you thinking of dredging it? There's a river comes through here, so it is going to silt up all the time.
Dredging is definitely on the list. We have a list of jobs that we need to do, so we're going to examine whether or not it needs to be dredged, but we're going to take professional advice on that to see what needs to be done so that we can make the most of the harbour conditions, because we have the Bracken River coming in just here, and you know the sea conditions have to be examined to make sure that whatever we do is, you know, sustainable. We would hope in the next 2 years, if you come back here in 2 years' time, that you're going to see a very different Balbriggan Harbour.
The Bracken River, even mentioned, dominates life here. It flows under the arches, into the harbour, and it naturally causes silting up. It means the harbour is mostly dried out twice a day at low tides. The depth of water available dictates how fishermen operate out of Balbriggan. If you miss the tide, you could be waiting for nearly 12 hours before conditions are right for either going to sea or returning to harbour. Richard Gilday is a fifth generation fisherman out of Balbriggan. I asked him what the issues were here.
Oh, where'd you start? The likes of this harbour, by standing still, it sort of went backwards a bit. You know, boats over my time fishing have got bigger and more efficient and stayed out at sea longer, and these boats are more or less fishing the same way as he done 40, 50 years ago, you know. So they've been overtaken and he can't compete anymore in a lot of ways. When it comes to the razor clams, that's what we've sort of been sort of forced into over the last 20 years or so, well, 15 anyway. They're all that's left for, that's viable for the small boats, you know.
It's inshore fleet.
Well, it's on our doorstep. The razor fishery's been good to the boats around here for the last 15 or so years anyway, but too much fishing has sort of taken its toll on that as well. You know, where'd you start? You can't just ask people to walk away, you know, from the only job you know, the only job they're qualified for can do, you know.
What would you like to see here? You've proposed plans yourself.
Well, a few years ago, a few fishermen got together, and just it's a rarity, you know, for fishermen to get together and work together, but we did, and we came up with a list, and we did expand on it a bit, you know, just to give a picture, but the basics, you know, as I said, to bring us into the 24th century, electricity would be nice, you know, a few working taps, general tidy up and a bit better management.
A bit of a nice factory.
It could help us, yeah. Like again, it wouldn't be for where we are at this moment in time. It's not going to help us out in a major way, but you know, it'd be a luxury in some ways. But you know, somewhere to store your fish. Like as I said, I asked about putting another container in the harbour, and I got a point blank no. The council seem to have this approach that they are eyesores. You can't say they're not, you know. But any sort of decent harbour has to have storage for the fishing vessels. You know, any of the council-run harbours I've ever fished out of, Kilmore Quay and Arklow and Clartahead, they're well equipped to help fishermen store their gear and that. You know, but look, a bit of dredging probably wouldn't go astray either. Bit of tidying up, you know, the fishermen, to be the first to say that it needs a tidy up, you know, like even getting a skip down the harbour sometimes to get rid of the rubbish that gets fly tipped down here can be difficult. So, look, some very, very basic things that wouldn't be too much to ask in any sort of modern harbour.
There's no boatyard here. Where do you get your repairs?
Some of the boats, they can do the repairs on a bit of a sort of improvised slip we have here, and sometimes they even go out onto the beach to get done, but my boat and a few other ones, they have to be lifted out of water. Like we get a crane to lift them. Most of the time, I'd go to Arklow, which is it's
three or 4 hours away.
No, it's and the rest. It's about 7 or 8 hours for my boat. If you time the tide wrong, it can turn into a 12-hour sort of steam. You know, tides are quite hard when you're steam down along the coast there. But again, it's something we can do in this harbour. Like in Clartahead, like the local boats, the harbour master will allow them to be lifted out onto the wall there. Like we have plenty of wall space if we use it better here. No, there's no boatyard, no. So you're losing employment in town as well, like for repair work, maintenance work, you know. Plus the inconvenience of having to, you know, move your boat for a week or two at a time further down the coast or up the coast.
What about the leisure user?
Well, look, you can see there's a bit of a mishmash of boats around here. There's all sorts of shapes and sizes.
Some obviously haven't been used in a long time.
Yeah, well, they're some people's projects, you know, and look, there's no major harm on them, you know. People like to spend their time on little projects like that, doing up boats and going fishing. And obviously, it's good to see people making use of the harbour and going out and spend a bit of time at sea, you know. It's better than having nothing here, you know, but there's a lack of organisation with them, you know. Some just come here and get abandoned. Some of them getting under our feet a little bit, you know. As I said, the last thing we want to be doing after 12 or 14 hours fishing is coming in here and having to dodge yachts and speedboats and get again a wall to land, you know. It's the hardest part of the day sometimes can be coming into this harbour and dealing with the mess.
Giving over one side of the harbour to leisure craft?
It's all possible, you know. It just takes a bit of engagement with the council and the leisure craft boats and the fishermen. There's always this fear that if the plan goes ahead that we'd be the last to be consulted, you know. It's happened before. There was a similar type situation where we redeveloped Greystones Harbour there and the fishermen couldn't land there for 10 or 12 years. So.
I've been down there and it's a big issue there.
It is. It's coming to a little bit of a head now. I think they're finding a way around it now, but it wasn't right that fishermen were there for generations and then just because of a development, you couldn't even accommodate a handful of small boats, you know. Again, it's the fear here that if money gets thrown in, the fishermen will be pushed to one side. But I think it'd be sort of detrimental to the harbour. The fishing boats bring a bit of life to it, you know. They bring character to the harbour. Most of these are family-operated enterprises, you know, father and sons. A few people employed down here, so you can't take that away.
You stay involved in the fishing industry?
The last few years, I've sort of been thinking about it, but it's where do you go? I'm 40, I have no transferable skills or qualifications, really, you know. So what do you do? You sort of get a bit institutionalised at fishing, you know. It's all you're used to, raised in a fishing family. So I'd like to stay at it, but things are a little bit bleak at the moment. But look, we have our ups and downs.
With a little bit of work, the harbour and the beach here could rival anything in the country. Tony Murphy is a Fingal County Councillor and Chairman of Balbriggan Tourism. He told me what he'd like to see here.
Fingal County Council are doing a rejuvenation plan of the whole of Balbriggan. And part of that, Balbriggan Harbour, is probably, I would think, one of the huge components and a key part of that rejuvenation because of what it can offer people coming in for tourism. And also you have your working boats. There's families here living off the fishing industry. We also have some leisure craft. But we need to speak to the people, understand their needs, and then try and accommodate all of what would be good for everybody who uses the harbour space.
What are you hoping to get here? Now, there's one part opposite us here. Is that the west side? It's completely run down, really?
Yeah, we have the north and south walls on the harbour. On the north side, we have some redundant hulls and boats that have been sitting here that are not seaworthy. And to date, Fingal have taken a few out, but they need to remove some more. So we need to look at that, but we need to also look at the positive side of the fishing boats and make sure that we're actually giving them the electrical supports that they need in order to work. They need good working space where they can repair their nets and their cages for fishing. So everything has been done on the harbour and there isn't really a dedicated safe space for all this to happen, and that's important when you have the public want to come down and access this area. They need to be able to walk down here and not have trip hazards, but they also need to understand that it's a working area also.
There's little or no leisure use here at the moment.
Very, very little. Very little. We have some leisure craft in the back end of the harbour, but for the size and scale of the amenity, no, you would say it's very, 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 very small.
How did it get to this state? Almost semi-neglected. It silts up, it dries out at low water.
I think it probably goes back to when Fingal inherited the harbour. And they probably didn't have the requisite expertise in-house to manage it. It was also being looked at as a burden of cost. But I think they've realised and recognised now that it actually is a massive asset and it just needs to be brought back to a place where it can actually offer an amazing amount of value both through tourism and local amenity. And we need to sort of say invest in it to get it to that space.
You're a councillor, you know where the money comes from. Is this actually going to happen? Is the money there?
Yeah, and I think if we're looking at a nervousness within the country when we're today negotiating money for COVID-19 expense, in the context of the rejuvenation plan for Balbriggan, Fingal County Council have ring fence money, which was borrowed from the European Investment Bank, in order to make sure and guarantee that they would be able to follow through with the plans. There's a very, very strong leadership team. It was headed up by Professor Breen McGrath from DCU. We have a lot of volunteers with serious expertise and understandings and value that have worked on a strategy. So I'm 100% confident that this is not going to fall by the wayside. This is going to happen. It will probably be a little slower than we would have liked as a consequence of COVID-19, but certainly this is going to happen. And the rest of the build-out with the propositions around the beach is absolutely a necessity for the future proofing of Balbriggan with a town that actually has the youngest population in the country.
It is a place which has enormous potential. We look over here, we've got a Martello Tower. There's a stunning beach coming around to us. And then the harbour, it would rival anything like Kilmore Quay, any of the really picturesque harbours around the country.
It would. And when you look at that and you say, OK, so what's going on here? I mean, as a kid, I used to come onto the harbour wall and fish for mackerel when the boats were coming in. You would have the shoals coming in behind them. And it was great fun, lots of activity. And that seems to have waned. I think part of that can be identified to the world of technology that we live in today, that maybe some of the activity that kids are getting engaged with are not as healthy as you would like them to. So I think that that's another aspect of looking at what we could have here with paddleboarding, wakeboarding, fishing, sailing, kayaking. You can go on and on and on. I mean, we have a beautiful boathouse up here which is going to be refurbed and sitting underneath one of the arches. Again, that could lend itself to maybe sea scouts or, you know, other activities around the harbour, around the water. And it's healthy and is what we need to be promoting today.
And all going well, that project in Balbriggan could really deliver something spectacular. Maybe we'll take up that offer and go back there in 2 years' time, and maybe the next time we'll sail in there. You can come along with us. Earlier in the year, before the lockdown, we heard a number of items from Captain Brendan Ford about his life at sea. Now aged 88, he's been all over the world several times on every kind of ship. This week, I visited him in his home in Raheny in Dublin, and we recorded some more of his adventures. We'll hear those over the coming weeks. Tonight, he recounts how, as a 16-year-old boy in 1948, he skipped school and ran away to sea for the first time.
Taking a summer job. I was supposed to sit the intermediate exam in the summer of 1948 in O'Connell Schools in Dublin. I remember we had as teachers Brother Gleeson and two lay teachers, Chinny Ford, no connection to me, and Johnny Close. I was not a very good student in many subjects, and in one day I went mitching from school and wandered down the south wall of the docks. Among the ships was a three-masted schooner, which had been engaged on long trips to South America and other places. During World War I, she was taken over by the Royal Navy, fitted with auxiliary engines and concealed weapons, and sent out to entice German U-boats to surface and attack. She was known as a Q-ship. I had heard the ship called Gaelic required a man. One of her crew had just been paid off, so I offered myself as a man. I was just 16 and was taken on. I can't remember how I let my parents know where I was going, as we sailed fairly soon after I joined the ship. I was engaged as an ordinary seaman at £4 a month. Very soon there was a big row when I was found drinking the captain's supply of tinned milk. Our ship had no electricity, we had only oil lamps. There was no piped water, and the toilet was flushed by drawing a bucket of water from the sea. One of the most important skills I was taught was how to trim the wick of an oil lantern so that it was a fine, clear, steady flame that did not smoke the glass globe. We had heard of radar and echo sounders, but we did not even have a radio on board. Our sails were very stiff canvas, number one, brown coloured. I spent 2 months on the ship while school was closed for summer, sailing to Milford and Ards in Donegal. I had my first experience of being stranded on a sandbank for 2 weeks, awaiting a spring tide to float us off again. In Ards, there was a Franciscan friary, which had a few apple trees in the grounds. I went there early one morning to pick up a few windfalls, but not seeing any decent ones on the ground, I climbed up a tree to get a few good ones. "What do you think you're doing?" said a friar below. "Getting a few windfalls," came my reply. "Next time wait until the good Lord sends a wind," said he, "but you may keep what you have collected." Our voyages were more or less circular. We brought pit props from Arklow to Garston, near Liverpool, and returned with coal for Dublin. Then to Milford in Donegal we carried grain and returned with silver sand for the Irish Glass Bottle Company in Dublin. Once in an English port I was left with all the cleaning to do, when barrels of blackberries we brought from Arklow fermented somewhat and dribbled around the hold. No one else could be found to do the job. On each voyage northwards from Dublin, we had to report to His Majesty's Customs Service at Newry, Northern Ireland, and I remember being surprised to hear that we are going around the Horn. It turned out to be Horn Head in Donegal, not Cape Horn in South America. After 2 months at sea, we were back in South Wall, Dublin. The captain called down to me where I was clearing up after breakfast. He said, "There's a fellow on the quayside calling out for me." I went up and found the fellow was my year 8 father. "I phoned for your exam results," said he, "but there is no result. You did not sit the exam." Within an hour, I received my balance of wages and was signed off. I was brought up to my old school, O'Connell's, where I was told I had lost my place. There was a lot of legal talk, but eventually I was allowed back to do my intermediate exam a year later. I enjoyed the English book that year, Treasure Island, by Robert Louis Stevenson, about a young lad, Jim Hawkins, sailing on a schooner with Long John Silver.
That was one of Brendan's first voyages to sea. He went on later in life to become the commander of the Grony Whale, supplying all the lighthouses around the coast. In an ongoing archive project here in RTE, we have been digitising some of the oldest recordings we have. This one tonight comes from January 1948. It's a phone call to the Bailey Lighthouse in Howth County, Dublin, with a strange request. Sitting right at the end of Howth Head, the Bailey has a complete view of Dublin Bay and can see every ship coming. Back in 1948, as Brendan Ford was running away to sea for the first time, radar wasn't readily available, and shipping agents obviously phoned up the lighthouse keeper to see if they could see their ship coming.
Hello? Yes? Bailey Lighthouse speaking. Looking for what? The Longford. Just a moment, please. Hayes, will you go and see, is there any sign of the Longford? Eh?
Very good.
Please.
The Longford is 4 miles east of the station now.
Hello? Yes, the Longford is 4 miles east of the station at the present time. Hello, yes? You want any more shipping? No, as far as we see, there's nothing else doing. Very light at the present time. Cheerio. Good luck.
The Bailey Lighthouse there, more than 70 years ago. Earlier today, I was out on Dublin's canals and I spoke to several people who are trying to live on barges full-time on the Royal and the Grand Canal. It's an issue which has been bubbling under in Dublin and in the rest of Ireland for quite some time, and we'll explore it here on Seascapes at length at some time in the future. But in the meantime, if you want to hear that report I did today, you can listen back on the Drivetime website, rte.ie/drivetime.